This is a tax update for February 4th, 2008, so you want your LLC to be an S-corporation. The Tax Update podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners are expected to do their own research to confirm items raised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. The podcast and the supporting document may be reproduced freely so long as no fee is charged for the use of the document or the audio file. Such prohibited use include using the podcast or document as part of a CP presentation for which a fee is charged. The podcast is sponsored by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.linebergservices.com. Lineberg Information Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters as well as access to a library of useful information to tax practitioners that subscribe to their services. Visit them on the web at www.linebergservices.com. This week, we're going to take a look at something that sometimes gets glanced over in many of our continuing education courses, and I will admit that it gets glanced over in many of the courses I do, because it falls between the cracks. And we have this interesting intersection between a limited liability company, which is a state law entity, and S corporations, which is a federal creation. And how the two interact with each other and what happens when you have either LLCs as members of an S corporation or owners of an S corporation shares, or the underlying entity which we wish to elect to be treated as an S corporation for federal tax purposes is a limited liability company for state income, for state purposes. I say not state income tax purposes usually, but just state tax purposes, state regular purposes for a state law. So for those particular issues, we need to look at some of the unique issues that arise in this context because we play a bit of a fiction in many ways. When we deal with LLCs, we're trying to put the square peg into the round hole, shall we say, to make the federal tax law conform to what is the state law and definition of what an entity is. Now, there are cases where we want to consider this option, and normally the option of using an LLC as an S corporation, as the entity for which we're going to eventually elect to treat as an S corporation, is not really driven by any federal tax issue. It's normally driven by state law issues or some other unique aspect of how things happen at the state level. So quite often we may have issues with deals that it is different levels of disclosure, different levels, let's say, for public records or public documents. For instance, in Arizona, LLCs are subject to very different standards for what information must be provided as a public record than our corporations. You may find other reasons why we wish to use an LLC as opposed to a corporation, or reasons why we have an LLC we want to treat as if it were a corporation for some other factor. But we're usually using an LLC rather than a corporation primarily for some factor other than federal taxes. Nevertheless, we have to take a look at the fact that once we've elected, once we've decided to use our LLC as our base on which we're going to treat as if it is an S corporation, we have to deal with some of the consequences that may arise due to the fact that we don't really have a corporation underlying our S corporation. And some of the translations, shall we say, between what exists in an LLC and what exists in a corporation, when we translate that layer, we're sort of doing a translation from one type of entity to another for tax purposes, creating this fiction, but that translation may create problems with some of the requirements in the S corporation area. So we're going to take a look at that. As well, we're going to take a look at an issue that gets some confusion, and that is, can an LLC be an S corporation shareholder? And we're going to deal with that side of the equation. Well, let's start with LLCs in general, and we kind of titled this section The Incredible Missing Entity. Because the regulations under Section 7701 of the Internal Revenue Code govern the tax classification of entities for federal income tax purposes, and these definitions deal with items that are described inside the Internal Revenue Code. Now, the Internal Revenue Code talks about corporations, partnerships, trusts, estates, but never discusses a thing called a limited liability company. That's not an accident. Limited liability companies were first created in Wyoming in the late 1970s, at least the U.S. incarnation of them. And the design that Wyoming was after was to find something that fell between the cracks. The problem at that point was that LLCs were trying to meet a need. What was our problem? Prior to the existence of LLCs, we had to basically form either a corporation under state law, or we could act as a partnership. And as a partnership, we could go to this special category called a limited partnership. Well, there were issues with all three of those options. First, the corporation. Well, corporations, unless we elect S status, had the problem of being subjected to the double taxation. At least, you know, and especially after the repeal of general utilities in 1986, we had a serious problem that if we had a C corporation, we would pay tax twice. In essence, we pay tax on the corporate earnings, and then we pay tax when we later distribute those earnings to the shareholders as dividends, or after the repeal of general utilities, even in liquidation of the value of their interest, if we liquidate the corporation, close up shop, and go home. We end up with a double taxation. Now, S corporations allowed you to get around double taxation, but at a cost. At the time, S corporations were extremely limited in the number of shareholders you could have. There was none of this family rule that allowed us to expand it greatly. And even today, S corporations have other issues. S corporations can only issue one class of stock. S corporations cannot have special allocations. In essence, the only way we can deal with allocating income among members of an S corporation is adequate compensation for services or some other item of interaction, not as a shareholder with the corporation. But we can't just say that this person, because they're bringing something to the table, they put up certain things or their reputation came in, we're going to give them, you know, a special overriding allocation of the certain X amount of the first, you know, 100,000 we make. Those types of special allocations that are very simple to do in a partnership and allowed under the partnership rules, as long as you manage your capital accounts correctly, are not going to something that's allowed the S corporation, where we have the pure per share per day rule. As well, a number of things cannot be a shareholder in an S corporation. S corporation shareholders are strictly limited to individuals, certain trusts and estates, and certain limited cases for exempt organizations now under current law. What you can't have is anybody who is a non-resident alien as a shareholder, nor can we have a corporate shareholder, nor can we have a partnership as a shareholder. Well, that causes all kinds of issues because none of those present any problem with our partnership if we form that. Now, partnerships, well, there we got the pass-through of income and we could have special allocations. No double taxation. We can allocate the income as long as we have substantial economic effect and we meet the requirements of those regulations, maintain our capital accounts as required. We can allocate our income very differently. We can spread it out almost at will in a partnership agreement, as long as there is true economic effect underlying that allocation. But our problem becomes a general partnership removes the big thing a corporation gave us under state law, and that was liability protection. So everyone was liable for all of the debts of the partnership. Anything that happened at the partnership level, if someone got a claim against the partnership, they had a claim against all partners. Now, there was in the partnership, this is kind of the equivalent of the S corporation, we did have this special thing in the partnership called a limited partnership that purported to help us get around this problem. To some extent, it does. But like the S corporation, the restrictions imposed, this time by state law, caused it not to be considered the best option for us to move forward. The problem with the limited partnership was, A, there still had to be a general partner with unlimited liability. Well, now that could be worked around with certain corporate partners because we are allowed to have corporate partners. But the other problem was limited partners were strictly restricted in what actions they could take and their participation in the partnership in order to retain their liability protection. That is, if you became too active or too involved in the partnership, you lost the liability protection. In the corporation, that was not true. You could become active as you want. You can work. You can do anything you wish inside the corporation. You didn't lose your liability shield. Now, into this mix, what was decided was what we needed was something that gave us the liability protection for state law purposes of a corporation, of the standard corporate function, but allowed us all the flexibility of allocating income on a partnership. Now, that was the goal here, and we have to remember that that's our goal. And this goal causes us a lot of confusion when people start talking about treating LLCs as S corporations, because in the original design, it was being brought in because S corporations were inadequate. Now, as things have gone forward, we've gotten the option to move it that way. But still, all too often, I hear many practitioners equate LLC with partnership. And as we'll discover here, as we discuss what is an LLC and how we resolve this matter under the tax code, LLC does not mean partnership, period. LLC has no direct equivalent in the code. Once we decide what this LLC will be treated as under the code, using the regulations under 7701, then we have fill in the blank, a partnership, a corporation, a disregarded entity. But what we do not have is anything any longer that's an LLC for federal tax purposes, aside from a caveat I should make that to the extent the existence of the LLC changes liabilities for certain debts, and there's requirements in federal law that look at whether you're liable for debt or not, whether you're potentially having to pay up on the debt. Obviously, that has an impact. But the impact there is not so much due to this entity theory. It is more due to the state law theory and liability for debts theory. And that's what causes us some potential issues with something being an LLC versus not. But LLC, for as far as entity for federal tax purposes is concerned and for federal taxation is concerned, once we decide what it is, that's what it is. An LLC that is taxed as a partnership is a partnership from here forward. Ignore the fact that it's an LLC. An LLC taxed as a corporation is a corporation for federal tax purposes. Everywhere else in the code, read corporation. Everywhere in the code, we discuss what the tax treatment for corporation is. That is the tax treatment for this entity. And the fact is an LLC does not make that changed. What can change, though, is sometimes the underlying documents can change the rights of the individuals, and that causes us some issues in the S corporation area. Now, the fact that LLCs were designed to be something that fell between the cracks, and those of us who remember when LLCs first came on the scene, remember we had a confusing time where prior to the check the box regulations in 1996, we had to test an LLC against these attributes. And if it had too many corporate attributes, then it was taxed as a corporation. If it lacked those corporate attributes, then it was taxed as a partnership, presuming it had more than one owner. Partnerships always have had to have more than one owner. If you only have one owner, you don't have a partnership. You would have what has come under the check the box rules to be called a disregarded entity. So what we had to do was look at what type of entity do we have and how does it function. Now, what we got was after that confusion, we had all these rules about whether the default state agreement was or wasn't going to be treated as a corporation, then the state legislatures would change that. We did all this back and forth and had all these rulings of what could or couldn't be there. In 1996, the IRS simplified the whole thing by coming out with the check-the-box regulations. And in essence, once we have a check-the-box, it allows us to pick and choose what type of entity we want our LLC to be, rather than having to go through that sieve of attributes to determine what fell out at the end of the day. Note, prior to check the box, in theory, you had no choice. Your LLC, once that agreement was taken, it would then run through the test. And if it came out as a corporation, it was a corporation. If it came out as a partnership, but you wanted to be a corporation, tough luck, it was a partnership. Check the box gives us an option and generally gives us two options for how to treat our LLC at the end of the day. Now, the key issue under check the box is how many owners does it have? If an LLC has treated as having two owners or more, then by default, it will be treated as a partnership if it is a domestic limited liability company. Now, note, there are special rules for foreign LLCs that I discussed real quickly in the footnotes here today, and if you have a foreign LLC, it is important to note that the default rules may not be what you think they are. In fact, in most cases, for a foreign LLC, you will always file the election to be treated whichever way you wish to be treated, just to make sure that is the treatment you get. But if we have two or more owners, we by default are a partnership. If the entity LLC only has one owner, there's only one person that owns the interest, it is treated as a disregarded entity. Now, this is important because disregarded means exactly what it says, disregarded. We forget the LLC is there and we just drop it straight into whatever the owner is. If the owner of a single member LLC is a partnership, those assets are owned by that partnership. If the owner of a single member LLC is an S corporation, those assets are held by the S corporation by default. If the owner of a single-member LLC is an individual, they're held by the individual by default. For all tax purposes, treat them as if the person held them individually and report it on the return of that entity. However, if it has more, once that LLC gets a second member, then the default goes to partnership. However, in either case, we have a right to elect an alternative treatment. Now, the issue is that to make the election, we look at Regulation 301.7701-3, and that gives us the number of owners test initially. Then it tells us we can elect, instead of our default treatment, to be treated as an association. That's Regulation 301.7701-3A. Now, if you go back to Section 7701, you're going to find that by definition, when they say what is a corporation, the first thing they tell you is a corporation is an association, then it lists a few other things that could be a corporation. So wherever you see the word association in these regulations, unless it says unincorporated association, you don't see that modifier. When we say association, we mean corporation. So under these regulations, the word association replaced with corporation. The election is made in accordance with the provisions found in Regulation 301.7701-3C, if we wish to elect to be treated as an association. And the general rule is found under 1I there. And essentially, an eligible entity may elect to be treated other than what is default, and it does so by filing a Form 8832 with the service center designated on the 8832. Now, the election has to contain all the information required by the form and instructions, including the ID number of the entity, and provided on Form 8832. Now, the election to be treated as an entity other than your default entity is effective as of the date filed unless a different date is specified on the Form 8832. Something you almost always are going to want to do, because it's kind of nice to know what day it really was rather than simply depending upon that postmark date. Usually will specify what date it was effective as of. That specified date can be up to 75 days before the date the election is filed or 12 months after the date of filing. Note, this means that we can retroactively elect to change our status back 75 days. And as we'll talk about here, in fact, in the case of community property interests that are held by husband and wife in a single member LLC, that election effectively can go back for a year to be treated as a partnership rather than a disregard entity. That's the unique entity that has a dual election status, okay, partnership or not partnership. I should note as well that now we have the new election for other single member LLCs. That one's probably not going to be as apt to be involved. We talk about this a little bit more about the potential problem we have with the community property election, because the other one has a requirement for active participation. But nevertheless, keep in mind that, and we don't know yet how we elect to treat something as a qualified entity for not filing the partnership return. But realize that if those elections work the same way as community property, the problem we're going to talk about community property LLCs can also crop up on those other husband and wife jointly owned LLCs if they own S corporation shares. Now, having corporate status, though, once you made the check-the-box election, then you're a corporation. And as a corporation, one of the things a corporation can do is elect to be treated as an S corporation. And it can make that election under Section 1362A1, provided that it meets all of the qualifications of 1361B. Now, as I said, once it's in there, it's a corporation. And once the check-the-box election is valid, that's a corporation. And corporations can be S, can elect S. So remember, we have sort of a two-step process there. We become a corporation. Now, once we have kind of, you know, have our consciousness, shall we say, as a corporation, we then turn around and elect S status because corporations can do that. Now, there was a problem the IRS had with this, trying to process this, when back originally you filed your 8832 and then you would file the 2553. Well, usually you'd file the two at the same time going to different service centers. That produced a problem. Turns out the IRS was generally faster at processing 2553s and 8832s. And when the service center got around to processing your 2553, they discovered that your entity wasn't a corporation. Well, one of the key requirements to elect S status is you got to be a corporation. So they would return the S election back as invalid, not, you know, essentially saying that was an invalid election, could not be made. The 8832 kept bouncing through the system, and eventually someday, maybe months later, it finally got approved. But well after 75 days after the effective date of the corporate status. Now, your effective date was still set by when you filed the form. But now your problem was you're more than 75 days after the entity elected to be a corporation, and now you hadn't made an S election within the 75 days, at least the way the IRS computers thought about the process. Therefore, you couldn't be an S corporation until the following year. Well, that was a mess, produced lots of correspondence, and while clearly you could recover from that, it wasn't easy and produced lots of back and forth the IRS would prefer to get around. So to eliminate that issue, Regulation 301.7701-3C1VC provides a shortcut election for entities that are LLCs but wish to be treated as S corporations. And that provides that if an eligible entity timely elects to be an S corporation under Section 1362A1 is treated as making election under the section for being treated as a corporation to be classified as association, provided that as of the effective date of the election under the S election, 1362A1, that entity meets all other requirements to qualify as a small business corporation under Section 1361B. Subject to Section 301.7701-3C1IV, the deemed election to be classified association will apply as of the effective date of the S corporation election will remain in effect until the entity makes a valid election to be classified as other than an association. Now, a couple of key points to note about that shortcut election. First, the 2553 only serves to make you a corporation if, in fact, you're an entity eligible to be an S corporation. Now, what that does mean is, per the wording of the regulation, if you filed this 2553 and then discovered you weren't eligible to be an S corporation, you would also not have made the election to be treated as a corporation. So both sides would fall apart. Now, honestly, in most cases, that's probably what we prefer. If we discovered that we had an ineligible shareholder, we would probably not want the IRS to say, well, you're not an S corporation, but we accept the corporate election, because that would make you into a C corporation. And you probably aren't thrilled with that result. If you thought you were getting an S, you probably would have preferred the partnership for now. Because remember, as a C corporation, once we become C, the built-in gain taint holds. And that means that if we straighten this out and a year later we're now got rid of our ineligible shareholder and we make our S election, that's fine, but the built-in gain kicks in. And since under Section 351 we can incorporate and bring assets in without triggering gains outside, so the unincorporated entity under 351, we transfer our assets to the corporation, we don't recognize gain. But if that becomes a C corp and then a year later we elect S, that amount of gain that existed on the date we put the things into the corporation effectively becomes built-in gain for S corporation purposes, and we then have to wait that 10-year period before triggering that gain, or we're going to pay the built-in gains tax, something which we obviously were trying to avoid having any of those double taxation problems by electing S from the start. Now, interestingly enough, though, what that also means, if there is some compelling reason why you want corporate treatment, even if the S election is invalid, it would appear you still need to make an independent 8832 filing electing corporate status for this entity, regardless of the 2553's validity. So that's an important issue to keep in mind under the regulations. If there's some reason why, if this S election fails, you probably need to consider, if the S election were to fail, do we want to drop back to the partnership status, or do we want to move forward or drop back to the disregarded entity status if we only have one owner, or do we want to go ahead and roll forward and have it treated as a corporation regardless? Understand the issue there, because it does have an impact. The other potential problem with that, of course, when we don't know what type of entity we have, is obviously we failed to file partnership returns and we filed corporate returns for a number of years, and that's kind of at least theoretically messy under the penalty provisions, maybe even more messy under the penalty provisions, because remember, now the penalty for failing to file the partnership return, those penalties went now for 12 months and at a higher rate under the new law, under the law we got right at the end of December. Now, the taxation of incorporation is governed, if we make the election to be an S, by the standard rules of Section 351. That means we have to have the 80% control, the shares of stock, and we're going to deal with, well, what shares of stock, but there are going to be deemed shares of stock, are issued in exchange for property. If there's a service component, that's going to turn out to be taxable. You know, we have all those standard rules of incorporation. But generally under 351, for most of the cases we work with small closely held entities, we can get into the corporate entity tax-free. The problem we have is you can't get out tax-free. And confusion over that issue, I see a lot of CPAs that get confused moving forward as to, well, when we come out of the corporation, the partnership rules apply to get the assets out. And no, they don't. If you've elected to be S, the corporate rules apply if we try to get our way back out of the back out of corporate status. Now, as noted above, entities eligible to be an S corporation are defined at Section 1361B. We talked about that earlier. And as a general rule, the corporation has to be a domestic corporation and not an eligible corporation. Now, the code defines four types of corporations that are ineligible from the start to be an S. And that's a financial institution using the reserve method of accounting, an insurance company subject to tax under subchapter L, a corporation making an election under Section 936, that's a Puerto Rico in possession tax credit, and a DISC or former DISC. Any of those cannot elect S status. They're ineligible to be S corporations. For the most part, the corporations that I deal with, and I suspect many of you deal with, have no problem on those four criteria. They're fine. The real problem comes with the four additional requirements imposed on the corporation. That is, it can have no more than 100 shareholders. Okay, that's not a huge issue, and there's nothing unique about LLCs that render them more apt to have 100 shareholders. So we can ignore that. It can have no ineligible shareholders. That means a shareholder other than an individual, an estate, a limited subset of trust, and certain exempt organizations. Now, again, there's nothing unique about an LLC that causes it to be a problem. Therefore, looking to have the LLC be the S corporation. There is something unique we'll discuss about a single member LLC holding S corporation shares that causes us an issue there. There can be no non-resident alien shareholder. Okay, that's also not a unique problem for LLCs. That could exist in either a corporate or LLC setting. That's not a problem. And finally, no more than one class of stock. Well, that last one's a unique problem. You go, LLCs don't issue stock, therefore no problem. Not quite. We're going to have, we play a fictional game here. We're in the Alice in Wonderland world of our LLC as a corporation. Therefore, our members' interests are treated as equity interests, which are treated as if they were stock. So therefore, if it's not treated as having a single owner and it's treated as a discarded entity, right, there's not an issue with an LLC owning S corporation shares. Let's go to that side of the equation, the ineligible one first. A single member LLC can hold shares in an S corporation. They will not kill the S election. The classification as disregarded applies for all aspects of Title 26, the Internal Revenue Code. As such, that's treated as held by the single member LLC's owner. So if I form Ed Zoller's LLC, I'm the only owner of the LLC, and we will presume instantly will make me single for a while here, so that there's no question about spousal ownership under community property rules in Arizona. So I'm the LLC 100% owner. I can have that the shares of the S corporation that I own an interest in titled in the name of that LLC, and I do not cause a problem at that point. That did not cause the S corporation to have ineligible shareholders. However, partnerships cannot be S corporation shareholders. Let's go back to my Ed Zoller's LLC, holds shares in S corporation. I transfer a 1% interest in that LLC to anyone else. Let's say I transfer that 1% interest to my brother. Now I have a partnership. Partnership is not an eligible S corporation shareholder. Therefore, the S corporation election is terminated as of the date we obtain an ineligible shareholder. That means that by transferring that interest in my LLC, I don't ever move the S corporation stock, By transferring that interest in the LLC that is the owner of the S Corporation stock, I kill the S election unilaterally. Now, that's a problem because when shareholders fight, they do lots of interesting things, sometimes just to get even at each other, and killing an S election generally causes a lot of heartache for those on the other, for those involved in the corporation. And since the people we're mad at are the other shareholders, well, that seems to be the group I want to make, that seems to be the group I want to harm. So I can kill their S election. Here comes the hitch. You need to be sure your buy-sell provides for what happens if our shareholder becomes ineligible. Not just if the shareholder transfers shares, but if the shareholder themselves becomes ineligible, you have to make sure that triggers your buy-sell. As well, a community property husband and wife that decides to file a partnership return pursuant to Revenue Procedure 2269 could cause you a problem. Let's say that's held, now go back to I am married, so it was held as community property. We decided to treat ourselves as disregarded for this purpose. Well, that's fine. So we disregarded ourselves. So we treated it as disregarded. So basically it flowed through and it was held by us and husband and wife are one shareholder for an S corporation. That's no problem. What happens? So I'm mad at the shareholders again. Now I go back and say, you know what? Revenue Procedure 2269 says each year I can decide essentially whether I want to file a partnership return or not. I think I want to file the return. So I go back and file a partnership return for 2007. That means effective as of January 1st, 2007, I was a partnership. It means effective as of January 1st, 2007, the S Corporation had a partnership shareholder. That means as of January 1st, 2007, apparently, it's not an S Corporation. Potential nightmare. And that one's retroactive. And again, the shareholder became ineligible, but the shareholder became ineligible by an after the fact transaction that took place that therefore rolls back a year earlier. That's also a potential mess with an LLC shareholder in a community property state subject to Revenue Procedure 2269. Now, more broadly, remember, LLCs can elect to change their status 75 days retroactively. So if my S Corporation shares are held by an LLC single member, back to the Ed Zollers one, unmarried individual, I can go back 75 days and elect to treat it as a corporation. That would kill the S election of the entity that I hold shares of as of 75 days ago. In essence, retroactively clobber it. I can only go back 75, but hey, you know, 75 days I can do that. Again, your LLC operating agreements have to deal with the fact, or I should say your S corporation buy-sell agreements and other shareholder arrangements are going to have to deal with the fact that if you're going to allow shares to be held by an LLC, that you have to be able to require that LLC to stay eligible, be an eligible S shareholder, or forfeit the shares or somehow otherwise deal with having to turn back over and sell those shares off and cease to be a shareholder. Now, for an LLC electing S status, the big problem is, now we got the LLC and we want it to be an S corporation. So now we go the other, more traditional route. Usually the problem there is the one class of stock requirement under Section 1361B1D. Now, but the regulations clearly tell us that we have what's there is going to be deemed as stock or interest in the LLC. So what we look at essentially is treat each of the members' interests in the LLC and look to apply that against the one class of stock test. Well, what's a single class of stock? Good news is the regulations 1.1361-1L tell us what it is. And the first key aspect to note is it only applies to issued shares, issued and outstanding shares. If we have the right to issue something that might be a second class of stock, but nobody holds that interest, that doesn't count against us. However, the regulation says of those interests that are out there, we have to perform two tests on the interest. To be considered a single class of stock, all interests have to have identical rights as to distribution and rights as to liquidation proceeds. That's under Reg 1361-1L1. LLC operating agreements can cause us problems here, especially if you have an operating agreement or an entity that's been operating as a partnership. The operating agreement was drafted for partnership purposes. And the partnership agreement provides for capital accounts shall be maintained in accordance with the regulations under Section 704, the standard boilerplate. If we have special allocations in that agreement, we have a problem. The special allocations create two big issues. First, of course, the problem becomes a special allocation to be respected under the regulations on 704 has to impact our capital accounts and eventually impact our rights to liquidation proceeds in the partnership. That's a problem because if I have differing rights as to liquidation proceeds, which I would if my liquidation proceeds are not tied specifically to my proportionate interest in the partnership, which it wouldn't be at that point. It'd be tied by, you know, the earnings and the allocations over the years and all the unusual amounts that get allocated to. So we can't, you know, the fact that you started with 50 units and I started 50 units does not mean at the end of the day we get the same thing in liquidation, because the special allocations may provide that at the end you get more than I do. That would kill our S election. As well, if they provide, as they often do, the rights for distribution are provided under the same rules. Your rights to take draws are provided by those same special allocations. That's a different right as distribution. That causes us to lose our S election because we have different classes of interest. Finally, remember that, and in any event, which is the big thing that people have to understand if they elect S status, I've seen a lot of people decide I want to be S, and unfortunately, I suspect in a lot of cases it has to do with self-employment tax versus FICA, and that's a whole nother issue to discuss. But ignoring that, they want to make the S election, they go out and do it, but they still want to be able to specially allocate their income. You can't do that in an S corporation. In fact, the one class of stock rule pretty much blocks it directly. If you look at the actual regulations that are involved, you find that you have to allocate per share per day. Now, one key issue you can have different, though, which is important to note, is that differences in voting rights do not cause multiple classes of stock to be deemed to be outstanding. Thus, we don't have to grant identical rights in essentially governance to all members and their interests they hold. Now, since this is a corporation for all purposes, you also look to the, you no longer look to the rules under the 700 series of the Internal Revenue Code. Therefore, guaranteed payments, not possible. You're going to have salary at that point. Nor do you have any longer the ability to do elective adjustments to basis due to transfers of interest under Section 754. That has been given up. Once your S election status, those are gone. Similarly, the provisions of Section 1402A1 related to self-employment income of a partner do not apply. You're not a partner any longer. Since you're not treated as a partner, 1402A1's rules on self-employment income no longer apply to you for the amount that passes through to you, and instead you are going to be treated as an employee of this entity subject to potentially FICA, but the amounts coming out of it will not be treated as subject to self-employment tax under those rules. Now, as I say, I see a lot of practitioners get confused about and try to apply partnership rules in many places when we deal with S corporation LLCs. What I find amusing is they never get that one wrong in terms, the one wrong here about the self-employment tax. That one they all seem to know, which never understood why they believed. If they believed that the fact was an LLC had a key issue for all these other purposes in liquidation, et cetera, why it didn't continue to get partnership treatment for this. But then again, that nobody seemed to worry about that. Reality is it's a corporation. That's why it doesn't get partnership treatment for any of these items. Since the LLC is viewed as a corporation, as I note, the member is likely going to be deemed an employee if that person performs services for the LLC and is compensated for such services. Also, note as well that salary compensation is about the only way to vary what the different individual people get, salary, rents, or something else that is a arm's length transaction, is the only way to vary your interest, vary what people receive from the company. Now realize, you have to show a valid relationship between services performed and the compensation received. You can't use this as a backdoor way to get special allocations into the mix that aren't related to services performed or some other direct economic transaction between the corporation and the individual. Because you still can create a second class of stock if it is deemed that, basically, if it's deemed to be a device to get around the limitations on two classes of stock, the regs provide that. Legitimate employment agreements, legitimate rental agreements, not a problem. However, if you're using them to magically reinstate all the oddball special allocations you had as a partnership, you may have a problem with your S corporation. Finally, what happens if we want to go back now? And I say, you know, we like this S corporation deal, but hey, let's say Congress passes a rule that says all S corporation income is subject to self-employment tax. Well, you know what? Despite the fact that should really have no impact, I suspect we'll see it has a significant impact on the number of people who have its number of LLCs that elected S status. We'll save commentary about the appropriateness of that huge impact, but expect that impact to be there. Now, if they do that, they want to get out and be treated as a partnership or disregarded entity, Section Regulation 301-7701-3 allows you to do so. The problem is practitioners read this and make a huge assumption that's not correct. You're allowed to do it, but nowhere in that regulation does it say you do it without paying taxes. That's your little problem. You can change your status election so long as you've not made an election within the prior 60 months to change your status. The initial election, if you form an LLC today and say, I'm going to treat it as a corporation, that doesn't count against you. I can elect for that to be a partnership or a disregarded entity 6 months later. That 6 months later is the first election that will trigger the 60-month period, not the original election when it was formed. Elections at formations do not count against the 60-month period. And even within the 60-month period, if I get the IRS permission, I can change my status. However, the catch is nobody says this is tax-free. In fact, if you follow the regulations down, now these changes of status are talked about in C, and you have to go, the fact you're allowed to do it, you have to go all the way down to G to find the discussion about, well, what happens tax-wise when we do it. If the entity, where you'll find the definition, if the entity has multiple owners, the change of entity is governed by Regulation 301.7701-3G1II. And it provides, if you're elected to be taxed as an association, elects to be classified as a partnership, the following is deemed to occur. The corporation distributes all of its assets and liabilities to its shareholders in liquidation of the corporation. And immediately after that, the shareholders contribute all the distributed assets and liabilities to a newly formed partnership. So you have to treat this as a liquidation of the corporation, followed by a formation of a partnership, subject to all the standard rules for both. The big problem is the corporation recognizes gain on distribution of property based on the fair value of property distributed for appreciated property. That's Section 311B. Yes, I realize this is an S corporation. Section 311 applies to S corporations too. There's no exception for gain that existed on the date the property was transferred from the members to the entity on the deemed corporation subject to 351. As well, such property includes goodwill and other intangible assets deemed owned by the corporation. So even though that stuff all went in without a tax consequence, if it comes back out a day later, you're going to pay the tax at the corporate level. Now, things don't get any better for a single-owner LLCS corporation. Going to a disregarded entity is governed by the next paragraph down at G1III with essentially the same results. This tells us that if we have the eligible entity classified as a corporation elects to be treated as disregarded entity, that corporation distributes all of its assets to its single owner in liquidation of the corporation. We have a liquidation. We all remember general utilities has been repealed. What does that mean? We trigger the gain at the corporate level. That gain is recognized. Now, in the S corporation, we do have the advantage of, unlike the C corporation, that at least the shareholder gets to up their basis for the gain recognized inside the corporation. Of course, they pay tax on that too. That's a minor detail. But they will get to recognize addition to basis. But they have to then, they compare their basis in their stock to the basis, the fair value of assets received, and they will compute their own gain or loss at that point on the transaction. So we'll pay one level of tax, but essentially we're going to pay that one level of tax based upon the fair value of what's coming out of the S corporation compared to the basis of the shareholder's stock. And eventually, we're going to end up paying that full gain. That transaction is one a lot of people who may knee-jerk elect S status not realize for an LLC, not realize is going to happen that if the day arrives when they decide there's no advantage to being an S anymore, I want to get out and go back to unincorporated. Well, you can be treated as unincorporated under the LLC rules, but the problem is to get back there, you have to run the fiction all the way back through and treat it as if you had taken a corporation, liquidated it, then reformed as the new entity. That also means the reformation of a partnership, all the standard 721 rules for contributing assets to a partnership come into play in this transaction. Now, what does that mean? It means that when you deal with LLCs and you're going to treat them as S or they're anywhere near an S corporation, you have to constantly be aware that you're playing a fiction and as well be aware about how those things map to each other and the issues involved. Also be aware that it's not necessary that normally if you have an operating partnership that has an LLC has been operating as a partnership, you have a partnership agreement, an operating agreement that was drafted for partnership purposes, you really are probably going to need to revisit and rewrite that agreement before you can elect to treat this entity as an S corporation. You can't just knee-jerk say, hey, we're going to be an S corporation and do it. You may find that your operating agreement means you never were eligible to be an S corporation. Now, this has been the tax update for February 4th, 2008. This particular tax update was suggested by an email from a listener that I received that dealt with the matters that went on the Arizona listserv. And so, if you remember the Arizona Society of CPAs, remember to check in over there. It's kind of a nice place to look. We'd had a few discussions about LLCs and S corporation status. The tax update is brought to you by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. Lineberg Information Services has matters or newsletters of interest to tax practitioners. Consider subscribing to their services. Visit them on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. This has been the tax update for February 4th, 2008.